We're going to talk today to Fred Glaser, who is publisher of Ruth Rice Press, and talks on the topic of the UN and sort of its role, I think, for this new century as to what's going to be taking place. And Fred, good to have you with us. I see kind of a changing whole role that the UN has had, particularly in the last 5 years. Wouldn't you agree that they've taken a much more a proactive stance regarding skirmishes from different countries and things like that?
Yeah, nice to be with you, Bob. I do. Pretty much since the end of the Cold War, there's been a number of operations around the world directed by the UN in Cambodia, Africa, and elsewhere. And I think increasingly we see the need for a rapid reaction force that, of course, is permitted in the charter that FDR and Woodrow Wilson helped write, really. A rapid reaction force to go into places like Bosnia, Rwanda, East Timor, and elsewhere.
Right, and we're seeing much more of that. There's sort of some criticism here in the U.S. Some people feel that we should not have U.S. troops under U.N. rule. How is that affecting this whole scenario? Do you think that we're going to have more of an outcry here?
Well, I think it's a real mistake to think that United States troops shouldn't be directed by the UN. They should be. Winston Churchill in his Sinews of Peace or Iron Curtain speech stated without any reservation whatever that there should be air squadrons, immediately was the word he used, given to the United Nations and directed by them. The real question is how and the logistics, and is the UN up to the task? And I don't believe we've really worked well to help develop the United Nations in that way and train it to that task.
Yeah, in fact, it seems as though most of the troops are pretty much U.S. or British-backed, and that's a lot of our equipment and all those things. And perhaps there needs to be more of a centralized type training and even material, all those kinds of things, and things bought through UN as opposed to this U.S. and some of the other few countries.
Well, often it does seem to be U.S. British troops. Actually, though, many troops have served from Pakistan, many other countries, Italy and elsewhere. What is needed, though, Mitterrand of France stepped forward and said he would give 1,000 troops from France on 24-hour notice to the UN in 1992. Neither we nor any other country met his challenge, and we've allowed that to kind of get lost sight of. But we still need that. We keep coming back to that historically throughout the post-war period, and again, that's where we are. I suggest that we really work for the next 10, 15 years creating a rapid deployment force with perhaps 10 to 15 countries that are on the Security Council, each contributing approximately 1,000 troops, and train those troops, get them to work together. They should be all voluntary people, young people who have the vision to serve their country in this way and the international community as well.
And of course, that would be something totally separate from what we have now. Now it's sort of a collection, as you mentioned, of troops that come together that are U.S., British, and certainly a lot of other countries too, Australia.
Mm-hmm. And, sort of a piecemeal operation
right,
is what we get.
Yeah.
And East Timor really highlighted how we the international community needs a force immediately at the beck and call of the Security Secretary General. It took a week or more to get the Australian troops and the other nations that participated patched together and in there. And by then, many people had died, their homes had been burnt to the ground, and the area was devastated. Same thing happened in Rwanda, and a million people were hacked to death in the most horrible ways. Had we had a rapid reaction force then, something significant could have been done to stop the mayhem in Rwanda.
Yeah, and there seems to be also kind of a reluctance on some people. It seems like we have now troops stationed, I think, probably in more places than we've had at any time in our history. And I think the longer they're there, there might be some reaction from people here saying, well, you know, how long are they going to be there? Are they going to be there, you know, for 5, 10 years, that kind of thing? And I think that can create some problems as well.
Well, there has to be a clear idea of what the operation is. It has to be well controlled, and it has to have an end game to it as well, obviously. That doesn't always happen. And we have a tendency to scapegoat the UN. We expect it to do something that we, the member nations, really haven't empowered it to do and given it the financial resources as well as moral and political support. That's a very significant problem. A lot of these issues are what I go into in my book, Into the Ruins. And I try to suggest we need to go into the ruins of the 20th century, the wars of World War I, World War II, and other such conflicts, and understand on a human level the impact of those convulsions. And I think inevitably, if we do, we have to, again, return to the realization that the United Nations is a democratic institution. It's not a communist totalitarian system. It's come out of our own tradition, as many of our political leaders pointed out, and helped to create it, really.
Why is there so much resistance on the part of some people in this country to the UN? It seems like, I mean, there's always been sort of a movement from some people to get out of the UN, that kind of thing.
Is it mistrust, or? You know, I mean, on one hand, sometimes that impulse comes from worthy motives, and that I myself share, out of love for our country, respect for it, a desire to preserve it and protect it and see it continue. And so it's a real fear that something could go wrong, and the UN would be used against us. That's a real misconception, because the UN has many checks and balances built in it, as well as our own federal government. And I think, too, politicians do a very poor job, sometimes understand the UN very poorly themselves, and do a poor job of communicating the real structure and nature of it to our populace.
Right. How do you see the role of the UN in this new century? Is it going to become a stronger, more global?
I think it definitely should, and I think we should pick up where Winston Churchill leaves off again in his Sinews of Peace. He states in 1945 in his speech in Missouri that the UN system should last for about 100 years, and I think we should make it a clear-cut goal that by 2045, we're going to develop the United Nations into a fully functioning world democratic government, and go all the way with it. We've been piecemealing it for 50 years or more. The Cold War prevented us from really going forward with it, but we've got to get it into our heads, too. The Cold War is over, and we need to find a new political structure for peace and international security. We haven't done that yet. The United Nations is the only game going that has come about through practical experience and not theory, and we need to build on that practice and develop it. And the best place to begin really is with a rapid reaction force.
Are you then talking about a government that would sort of supersede what individual nations have?
Well, I don't think so at all. I think it was much more the Republican representative federal structure we have between the nation, national level, and the states. You know, we started off, Bob, with the Articles of Confederation after our own Revolutionary War. It didn't work out, and we had to find a more secure structure at the national level. We're sort of living under Articles of Confederation with the UN right now on the global level. We need to democratize it more. Boutros Ghali in 1996, last thing he did before he left the UN was he released his agenda for democratization. He points out since the Cold War ended, many, many people have, countries over 60 or 70 worldwide in Africa and elsewhere, have gone to the UN and asked for help with forming constitutions, police forces, courts of law, everything. And that's happening around the world. Democracy has won, and now it's in our best interest. Many countries are asking us to do this, democratize the UN on an international level more so.
Yeah, and in fact, we've talked to people on this program about who have stated, in fact, that they feel it should be set up on American principles, American type of government. It already is.
The UN charter is full of the British American conception of political behavior and values. We need to really make the General Assembly basically an elective system. And in that sense, I think we'd be talking about 20, 30 years or more in which we have to work with those countries to develop cultures of democracy in them that are more effective. If they knew that we were working towards the goal on the international level of a democracy at the UN that would include them, that would inspire people around the world within their national level even to work for that goal more so, I believe.
Yeah, and of course, there are a lot of other aspects of this, environmental, there are economic issues, there are many things just not only to do with, let's say, governing or in military-type disputes, but there are many other areas as well.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, some of these things I cover in my book. I wonder if I could mention my 800 number, people would be able to get a hold of it.
Oh, sure, go ahead.
It would be 800-247-6553. That's 800-247-6553, and the title is Into the Ruins.
Right, and we have about a minute left, and I think, in looking at this, there's got to be some way, and perhaps you touched on it too, maybe that the UN has not done a real good job of presenting itself in the way that it should be, and perhaps that will, those barriers have to be overcome in this country and some other countries. I think probably in this country more than any other.
I think you're absolutely right, that there are barriers there. We need to overcome them. We've tended for several years now to kind of demonize the UN and make it our scapegoat and ask it to do things that we haven't structured it or allowed it to do, really, and then complain after the fact. Well, that's unfair, and it's really not in our best interest. We had this terrorist coming across Seattle with a trunk load full of conventional explosions. The reality of the world today is he could have been bringing a nuclear bomb in the back of his in a car or a gallon of anthrax or something else, We've got to create the culture of democracy throughout the world that will increase peace. And I think that can only be done through the UN.
Craig Glazer, thanks for the visit. Most interesting. We'll talk